Blog Talk Radio.
What's happening, everybody? This is it. This is the time on the Wednesday, the 25th, 26th of February, 2020. We are live on the Wednesday on our scheduled time, live to you. We got no time limit for this show, so we're going to talk till we get tired. No, I'm just kidding, but we're going to talk until we feel like not talking anymore. About the same time, maybe a little bit longer, because, you know, sometimes the brothers get a little bit long-winded. But we got a lot of stuff to talk about. The SmackDown last night, South Carolina, pretty interesting. We got this coronavirus deadly spreading around the world, even though the Emperor Trump said it wasn't that serious and contradicting. I'm reading something that says right now, breaking news: Trump contradicts the CDC outbreak not inevitable because he done said so. Yeah, time for the lies and the BS to be up. We ain't got time for people to get sick because this jackass wants to make up some stuff. Time's up, all right? And we got to talk about who we really need to get behind for president, and we're going to get to all the other stuff. Let's bring in the brothers first. Let me bring in Brother Byron Saunders. I know he's ready to chomp at the bit. Brother Byron, what's happening?
Oh, my goodness, oh, my goodness. You know I'm down here in the cesspool in Washington, D.C., and it's
so
quite
Byron,
interesting.
Let me stop you right there.
Yeah.
It wasn't really a cesspool until he got down there, even though they lied and said it was. It wasn't really
that's
a cesspool
right.
Until they came down and brought their little swampy ways. They, you know, it's interesting.
Yes.
Projection is an interesting psychological thing. But go ahead, my brother. I digress or sidetrack.
Well,
you pick
one. It's okay because primarily what we as a nation are witnessing, and I'm glad you mentioned the South Carolina debate, you know, the coronavirus, because ultimately, can and will we arise above the crisis? We have no other choice. And it's sad to say the information coming out of the White House with respect to the coronavirus is misleading. It's not factual. When the CDC is contradicting what's being said, let me just tell you something. You know, a couple weeks ago, I was in San Antonio for my son's graduation, 8 weeks of basic training, United States Air Force National Guard. Well, here's the true story of really what went on while I was. Turns out my son's mother was staying somewhere at a motel near the airport, San Antonio's airport. She had gotten reservations to move from the hotel to a compound for visitors on Lackland Air Force Base. Now, we were there on the 12th and on the 13th. On the 14th, same day as Valentine's Day, she had a text message from the compound in the hotel where she was going to be staying on Lackland Air Force Base, that they had to reject her reservation. And you want to know why they had to reject her reservation? It's because they were moving coronavirus persons into that compound on that day. Now, you don't even read about this in the newspaper, but I'm telling you, I've seen it firsthand. And, you know, when you think about it, the fact that they would move virus persons, these American citizens, to Lackland Air Force Base, which is huge, guys. I mean, you really got to understand San Antonio is a big place, but the Air Force Base there is huge. And then and the place they were moving them to is in the middle of the compound, Lackland Air Force Base. So it's not like it's isolated. It's very much surrounded by personnel, trainees, and because Lackland not only services the Air Force, but the Marines, the Army. I mean, they have training sessions there for all branches of the military. So I've been a witness to it firsthand. And you know, when I went down there, I was overcoming the flu. So when I heard about this, because my son confirmed it, his mother confirmed it, And I'm thinking, there was no warning whatsoever to the 750-some parents who were down there for that graduation. So if we're not getting information that's we're getting information that's contradictory from the White House, from CDC, which is in Atlanta, Georgia, ladies and gentlemen, we got a problem, and it's called communication. And if we cannot communicate to our citizens what's really going on with a pandemic and CDC saying, be extremely cautious, and we got a president saying, oh, it's all under control, who lies every single day? Now, who are you going to believe?
You know who I'm believing, brother. You know, the CDC.
Okay.
But let's bring Wayne in here, too, because I know he's chomping at the bit to get in here. The legendary newsman, Mr. Wayne Gilman. Wayne, how you doing this evening?
Gentlemen, it's good to be with you again. And I'm just as distorted as everyone else out here having to, you know, see through what's going on and what's not, you know, decipher what is fact and what is not factual. And it's shameful that, you know, they talk about the Chinese not being, you know, very forthcoming with information about what's going on in their country. And it seems like our leadership is, you know, taking on the same role. The problem is it's just segueing from the kind of, you know, diplomatic and democratic society that we've had. And it's just bothersome. You know, when you read something in the media and then you turn around and get the official word from the White House of what is considered official, it's like night and day, you know. And I don't know, we've gone through such an emotional roller coaster this week, you know, between the debate last night, the memorial for Kobe Bryant, you know, we could just go on and on. It's like, I just feel like we're living on the edge every day. And at least when we had our predecessor in charge, the previous, you know, chief executive, there was turmoil in the world, but it wasn't at the point where everything was just constantly changing, that you're living on the edge. You don't know what to expect, you know. So I'm not surprised by what Byron just mentioned, because he had cut funding in preparation, funds that were supposed to go towards problems, emergency, contingency measures, like what he witnessed at Lackland. They were cut because that money was devoted towards this man's erection of a wall. And I
exactly.
Could, you know, maybe, you know, and I want to use the word erection and tie it in with something else, but, you know.
Well, Wayne,
just,
you know, what's really interesting, as you mentioned this, is the fact that the 1% oligarchs of our country think that they can buy their way into anything. They can throw money at anything and it will instantly cure it. The fact is exactly what you were just saying. They cut funding for research and development to the National Institute of Health, which would have been dedicated towards CDC and other viruses that are out there that it could become like the one that we have right now with the coronavirus. And I understand there's one coming out of Brazil that could be even worse. And these and we're talking about biological issues that could be weaponized to be warfare items. Now, who's to say we're not in that process right now? Okay? We did have a government that engaged in infecting African Americans in Tuskegee, Alabama with syphilis.
Right.
You know what
right.
I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Because of the point of what's going on in Flint, Michigan is not an accident. And it was targeted with communities of color. So we have to be very conscious.
Right, and haven't there been instances also where the United States government, previous administrations, have let certain diseases and flus get into the general population as a crowd control or to test what happens in terms of the virus acting? I mean, I believe if we're able to get some of the true history books and some of those black ops files, and I think that some of those issues have been found to be true, that they've experimented on the American population without the American population knowing about it. And certainly the first people that are going to experiment on, unfortunately, Byron, for you guys, is the military. Because as you guys know,
exactly,
the U.S. government has exposed their military, our military rank and file, people on the ground, to a great number of risks, unnecessary risks and things. Shoot, let's just talk about his need to kill that general recently with the bomb,
right,
or whatever it was.
It's
in
Iran.
Terms that
that's
affecting,
right,
it's affecting troops now with these kind,
yeah,
of brain injuries that he said nobody, couple of concussions. So, you know,
up to 115
now
who have been identified.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And to me, you know, every day, you know, I expect nothing from this dude. I expect lies.
Yeah.
So I'm not really surprised. What I'm surprised about is the lengths and really the stupidity of his lies. And there are people who believe,
yeah,
that. But it's like, wow, this guy really used to be in a con man where he thinks he can con everybody. And, you know, the old adage about New York is, you know, you got to, when you come to New York City, you got to be ready because there's con people everywhere. Sometimes it's a fast city, and Donald Trump is the poster boy for that image. Formerly the poster boy, now that he's down in Florida with a lot of his fellow Klans people. So, you know, I believe nothing that this guy. He's a liar, and I don't know why we waste time even discussing things that he says. I just am really pissed at the punk Democrats, and you know, I'm really connected, but I think that we never do what's practical, what's logical, what is, you know, puts our best foot out there. Like when the debate opens up last night, and Nora O'Donnell, the first question is about the economy that Trump has got going so well, and now it's going here. How do you think the virus or whatever, wherever the question, wherever the rest of the question went? But my problem, and what I've been saying, and also what I've told my cousin, is that take the narrative back that they've been promoting that this guy has turned the economy around. Take that narrative back. Why does it take Joe Scarborough, a backbencher, as it's known to people who have been who have served with him, and you know what that means? It means he never passed any legislation. That's what a backbencher,
right,
means. But why does it take him to come on MSNBC on this morning show and say we're really in the 11th year of the Obama economic recovery and Trump is just putting his name on? Why does it take him to say that, Democrats? Why, when this woman asked this question, which is ill-informed based on this bullshit premise, do none of you running for the presidency to represent the Democrats correct her, even the vice president? But we know what the vice president's challenge is, even though we don't want to say it out loud. So I'm not even going to go there. But what about the rest of the individuals? Nobody's saying
that. Well,
so this is what I'm talking about.
You might recall, and we said this back in the early fall, August, September, on our radio show. I indicated then that the tariff was going to hurt the farmers when he created a bailout for the farmers. Now, when we talk about the stock market tanking over the last 3 days, make sure you recognize what's really tanking, because the tariffs have impacted so badly on our farmers in our Midwest that the bailout is actually paying them for losses of their crops by way of the bad weather we've had. You remember the floods in the Midwest and how the crops have been destroyed, and the crops that were supposed to be bought, soy and corn, by the Chinese.
Yeah, because let me just
bought.
Jump in. Let me jump in here and jump on your point real quick, Byron, before you continue on. Because you know what? When you're running government and when you're responsible for shit, inevitable shit, unpredictable stuff, life happens. So when you take all the money out of there, so you don't have that reserve of money when something happens, Mr. President, which is supposed to be part of your responsibility to be aware and anticipate the unanticipated, right? This is the type of stuff that happens. Go ahead, Byron.
Right.
And there's
and
no
so,
insurance
and so,
for that.
There's no insurance. And what's happening right now, the stock market drops, and we've been saying this for a while. How do you engage a economy with a $1.3 trillion deficit because of the tax breaks that you've given, and then expect us to recognize that your economy is running well, but the most jobs that you could create during the busiest merchandise month of the year in December, you could only create 144,000 jobs? Gentlemen, I'm not Alan Greenspan, but I
which Barack beat him? Which Barack beat him?
That's
his
right.
first 3 years.
Beat
then Barack had more
right.
on the average. But let me just throw that out there real quick. Go ahead.
Yes.
You know.
And that's just the point. Is just basically because you're right. The Democrats have to attack his false budget numbers. It's crap. We know it's crap. They're cooking the books. The jobs that are being created are not full-time jobs. They're part-time jobs, and they're trying to assuage the Chinese because the markets that we our Fortune 500 companies have been vested in cheap labor overseas and primarily in China. Microsoft stock is about to tank because they don't have product being made in China to engage with the needs of this country. You got to really pull all this together, fellas, because the market cannot sustain itself with a crisis like it's going on right now. And a health crisis, that impacts not just the stock market. It impacts the trade market out of Chicago. It impacts the trade market that he's over there in India right now trying to get a trade deal, and he's not going to get it because he doesn't have the support of the economy that he keeps saying is so wonderful. So we have to start peeling the onion and revealing the stench that's underneath all of this, and it's becoming quite apparent. Chickens are coming home to roost.
Right,
well,
and that's kind of what happens too. Go ahead, Wayne, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say in response to what Byron was saying, that the whole two-hour debate situation was highly questionable because, I don't know, the format seemed a little off to me. It seemed like it started off with the two anchors, O'Donnell and Gail King, and then like halfway through it, they were joined by three others, and I'm trying to think if I was distracted by something. I was on the phone with a relative of mine, but we were watching it and talking at the same time. And then before the debate ended, it seemed like it went back to being just two anchors again. And I'm glad.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
Beg your pardon?
That's exactly what happened. They went to another segment. They had that segment in where they invited the other anchors or other notable newscasters on the station. And then that
right.
segment went away, and then the two of them came back, and it was just the two of them again.
And the thing that really got to me is that it seems like the three that they brought in, I forget all their names, but the bottom line is they seem to be the heavy hitters. They asked the relative questions. You know, you're right about O'Donnell not doing her homework, and because there have been enough media reports about the distinction. When Trump came out a couple of weeks ago and saying that he, you know, bested Obama with regard to the economy, there were a number of comparisons on Washington, MSNBC, CNN, and even Fox. Every once in a while, you'll get some truth out of them. And they even said something about it being, you know, suspect showing a graph. But the thing that really gets to me is just that kind of nonsense without it being checked, and then you're on a network where maybe there are people who are not watching, you know, they don't have the Jones that Eric Payne has or Byron Saunders has or myself in terms of just being consumed in the news in all sorts of ways, trying to get definitive information. You know,
you mean the majority of our populace?
Well, I hate to say it, but you're right there on the point. You know,
unfortunately,
you got that situation with her with O'Donnell. And then with all due respect with Gail King, I mean, I'm still on the fence about how she handled that interview with, not Obama, but with Kobe.
Right,
and then
the Kobe situation.
She lobs the softball to Bloomberg. It wasn't anybody reading between the lines. It was almost like as if, you know, I'm spending a lot of money here, Mr. CBS. I'm spending a lot of money here, and I need to resurrect my campaign, you know, against Trump. And
What are you talking about, Drew Bloomberg?
I mean, you all have been in media long enough to know that crap like that does go on from time to time. But the question, the way, in the manner in which it was asked, you know, about what he did for New York, and I'm still out there. I still think of all the candidates. In fact, I got into a verbal discussion with my sister about stop and frisk last night before, you know, the debate started and during. You know, the bottom line is I still think that, all right, the guy's got money. You know, we got all he's got baggage like everyone else on that damn panel. You know, let's stick a Band-Aid on it. Maybe he may have money to solve the world's problems, you know? It seems like he throws his money towards certain things that I would approve of. And I'm not saying that he's the one, but the Democrats have got to circle the wagons. It's getting late in the game. And Elizabeth Warren, you know, I mean, I'm worried about this. I'm really worried about this.
I want to dust off my
passport to Trinidad.
Right. I kind of disagree about the I don't quite see it as he was trying to resurrect. That's why I asked, were you talking about Bloomberg in terms of the campaign? His campaign is just starting, so I didn't see it as an attempt to resurrect. However, obviously, he's paid that big-ass fee for that big commercial. Let me just finish that big commercial that he had after when they went to the commercial break, you know, and ran his ad, which is smart. But, you know, I kind of didn't know where you're going, but and you're going in the direction that I've come to with Bloomberg is the practical sense that, yeah, we might have to, you know, we might have to go with him because the objective is to beat Trump. If the objective is to beat Trump.
Exactly.
So all of this other stuff, you know, and it reminds me of a conversation that my cousin and I had with an old friend of ours as we went to have dinner after one of the Seton Hall basketball games that we like to go to. And she said, yeah, but they're talking, but there's got to be something more than we need to beat Trump. I was like, no, they got to tell. She was saying, you know, they got to, you know, the traditional, tell what they're going to do, yada, yada. I said, no, the objective is to beat Donald Trump. And she said, bye-bye. I said, but the objective is to beat Donald. But the objective is, because what happens is individuals start listening to people and say, oh, well, he's this and they're that, and then I'm going to vote for this person, I'm going to vote for that, I'm going to go vote for Bernie, and the practicality of Bernie getting in is slim when we get to the general, and which is what happened the last time when he didn't decide, he got mad and his supporters got mad, so they didn't vote for Hillary, they didn't vote for all, he didn't even help, he didn't even campaign for Hillary. So in your purity of your liberalism, Bernie, this is the problem I have, and my fellow Drop Squad members and I talk about this in particular. The extreme ultra-white liberal who means well and says we can do it all for everybody and everybody can do that, that's great on paper. But when it doesn't go down, y'all can still walk down the street. When we're leaving this meeting tonight, y'all ain't going to get followed home. You might not get pulled over. We are. So we ain't got the luxury that you have to, oh, well, we missed it this time, and we'll get them next. We ain't got that luxury right now. We got one shot, money. We got one shot. So we don't need to waste it potentially. If you ain't going to win for sure, if we don't know you're going to win for sure, then we can't mess with you and your idealism and stop feeding that to our people. And this is what I'm saying. Our young people are black, and I'm talking about black people. You know, and it's great that white and black could be together on this subject, but we're the ones that catch the hell. We're the ones that on a day-to-day basis, stop and frisk was being messed with. So all that ultra-liberal shit that everybody wants to talk about and we need to be down, I want our black people to understand it ain't the same for you. You ain't got that luxury that they got. Always remember that. And until that day it is, then stop going along hook, line, and sinker with all this bullshit that they put down. Excuse my language. I understand, and I'm down with Bernie. I'm down with what you're saying, but he's talking revolution. You're talking about a system of government that this country wasn't founded upon, and that's why Mike said this conversation is ridiculous. This is a capitalist society. I ain't going to let you turn it into socialism. And not until we get more educated people like Wayne just referred to, like we referred to, that are educated about really what's going on, because up until now, we didn't have the internet, and they couldn't control the flow of information all the time. They can't control the flow of information like they did years ago. So now people are a little bit smarter, the ones that want to be smarter, the ones that want to find out and really find out the truth and do the research for themselves. But also the ones that want to continue to be ignorant and live in that cloud and believe whatever their king says, they can do that too. But we need to understand we don't have the luxury. You know, our people don't have that luxury. And that's what's starting to kind of a little bit piss me off about Bernie Sanders and his whole appeal, you know.
And then I heard that he said he give up. He does, you know, he's one of those Brooklyn boys that don't want to get ethnic. You know what I'm talking about? but he does not want to give up, you know. Even his answer about his own ancestry just, you know, blew me away last night. You know, what he's going to, well, we'll just have to wait and see when we get there. They've already designated this spot. You're going to move it now after they went through all this trouble? You know, the bottom line is, what did you do to stop it? What did you do to stop the Israelis from moving the location of the embassy? You know?
Right.
It's crazy.
Yeah, 100% right. I mean, if you didn't want to stop it burning, if you weren't down for it then say that. And it's okay. But, you know, this is the whole thing. They want to say something and then fess up for it. Walk it like you talk it, money. Walk it like you talk it. You know? But don't come up. That's what I'm saying. I don't have the luxury to believe your bullshit. You know, there's certain social economic class of black people. Yeah, it ain't gonna hurt us like that. Maybe, but if this jackass is able to stay in the White House for another 4 years and pop his whole white nationalist stuff that he likes to pop and give them the respect, who knows how much more widespread the whole pulling black people over thing that happened to get shot by cops or another. Crazy people that follow this guy, who knows how much more that's going to grow within the next 4 years as this guy gets more arrogant and drunk with his power. He's already telling people that, no, don't believe the doctors, believe me.
Thank you.
Right.
I mean, how much crazier do we have to get?
Doctors,
you know, how much further up their ass do they want to put their heads? You know, and I don't mean to be using so much bad language, but it incenses me. This guy is a liar, and to have the nerve to stand up there and say the doctors are wrong, the CDC is wrong, not to mention going after the Supreme Court, too. This guy, who is this guy? Oh, I wish I had $1 billion. He's toast.
Hey, that's the whole issue.
If I had a billion dollars,
fellas.
Okay.
Oh, boy, if I had $1 billion, boy, I'd take this guy, yeah, boy. Oh, he will. This guy's too easy.
You're pointing something out that's really significant in the impact of these people who have money, like Bernie, who's got some money himself, and we're talking about Bloomberg. But the biggest problem of all was revealed in the debate. They refused to talk about policies and issues. Even Bloomberg, who says he has a Black Wall Street plan to pour into the billions of dollars into the restructuring of the communities of poor people. But the truth of the matter is that none of them are talking policies and significant issues of the African-American community, and we're the backbone of the Democratic Party. Now,
but hold on. Let me stop you right there. Let me disagree with you real quick. Because just the fact that he mentioned those words came from his lips, I give him points. You feel me, Byron? Just the fact that he talked about building black wealth, I give him points.
Yeah.
Because ain't none of them even had that go through their lips. And Steyer gets points because he even mentioned reparations on the stage, because none of them else did. And Amy Klobuchar, right next to him, she's an automatic no for me because she wouldn't even let reparations be discussed out of hand. I mean, as soon as she asked the question, no, I don't think that would be necessary.
Right.
Boom, okay. You don't even think it's something that needs to be discussed? All right, then you're off my list of potential people that I might vote for. This is what I'm talking about.
Do you know
because
that,
I want to hear people that at least have thought about the issues that are concerned to us and are important to us. And even and just the fact that they vocalize it and verbalize it shows to me that at least they thought about it, if nothing else, other than a millisecond. Go ahead, you were saying.
And what I was going to say was, even Roland Martin the other day broke it down, because the Black Women's Roundtable on politics sent each of the candidates 100 survey questions. 4 of the candidates responded. Amy Klobuchar, and this is from Roland Martin. You have to watch our black commentators because they're giving it to us. Amy Klobuchar didn't ask the Democratic National Committee until 2 weeks ago if they had a list of African-American churches in South Carolina. What does that tell you? What does that tell you?
I rest my case. That's what it tells me. I rest my case.
Yes.
Say that again, Byron. I was trying to, you know.
That Amy Klobuchar's communications director, not until 2 weeks ago, wrote to the Democratic National Committee to ask them if they had a list of African-American churches in South Carolina. We got to vote this coming Saturday, 2 weeks ago, and you don't know.
And that's why her numbers are where they are.
I'm willing to put $100 to your one that you know more. You have more churches in South Carolina that are African American than she knows. Okay.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You're not running for office.
The thing is that these people don't do their homework. And then the thing is, the backdrop has been there. They've been saying
it's not homework. It's not homework.
Biden,
it's that we're not on her. She doesn't care about us. It ain't doing your homework, because doing your homework would mean that you would at least be express a concern. You know what I'm saying? You do homework when you're concerned about that subject.
Well,
the thing is,
how many times have you, you must be told that in order to win the White House, you got to win that black vote.
Exactly.
Hello.
And that's it.
That's making our point right there.
You don't want to leave it to the Electoral College again. So, I mean, the bottom line is you're supposed to be doing all these things that are powerful and working towards understanding what the issues are. And the bottom line is that you put yourself in a very vulnerable position, and they have intelligent people who are going to ask the right questions. The problem is that are many of them getting on the stage, to actually be a participant. You mentioned Roland Martin. I hadn't. Where is he these days? I know he's not on CNN anymore.
He's on TV One. Yeah, he has
okay,
TV
yeah,
TV
yeah.
All right.
Is he still on TV One?
Yeah.
I didn't know he was still on.
They pick up his feed, but he has his YouTube channel that he
well, that's,
broadcasts
yeah, right,
daily.
Right. And that's really where we're all going these days, because I really think that's the future, man.
It's where we've been. Where we've been.
And here's something else put this one in your pipe. It's been 65 years that today, 65 years since the death of Emmett Till, that the United States Congress passed a bill outlawing lynching as a federal crime. My brothers.
Right.
Where
you said are it was 65
we?
Years. You said it's 65 years
since Emmett Till's death. That's right.
They just passed
the bill today.
Oh, yeah,
and it's going to sit in the Senate because it's not going to be pushed by that Confederate Ku Klux Klan Mitchell.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
I know exactly what you're talking about, but the incredible thing to me is that it's just now becoming, what I'm saying? It's 2020. It's just 65 years later. They just now have an anti-lynching bill. This is what I'm saying. America is nothing but a big myth in terms of when it comes to the promises that it makes to black people. That's exactly my point. 65 years later, they just now passing an anti-lynching bill? Come on. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So we need to understand.
That's what I'm saying. We need to understand
how they really think of us. And if Bloomberg is the one to get us in, I don't care. Let's put your $1 billion in. Because I heard that if Bernie becomes the man, he's not going to take Bloomberg's money. Okay, peace money. We need to win.
See?
This is what I'm talking about.
You see?
This is what I'm talking about. Politics.
And
Eric,
that's what I'm looking at. You've got to look at the big picture.
Here's the elephant in the room on all of this. And I'm going to ask the question because we got to come to an answer on this. Is America ready for a Jewish president? Either Bloomberg or Sanders.
Is America ready for a gay president?
Hello? And the question is slamming up against the support of the GOP, because their backbone of their support are racists. The two groups of people that they don't like the most, black folks and Jews.
I'm sad to say it. But let me tell you something, Byron.
Because we've got to ask that question.
I never thought I'd live to see a day when Barack Obama got denied, went through two terms without being shot at. I never thought I would see that day.
That's true.
So who's to say? Maybe it's their turn.
First off, you never thought you'd see the day that he would get elected. That's the first thing. Everything else is a moot point.
Hello.
If he doesn't get elected.
True.
And then after that, you never thought he would make it through if he got elected.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. So who's
Amen.
To say
God
will that
God
maybe,
bless
you.
Thank
and,
God
and,
he did.
And I tell you, if little Mikey gets in there, one term, and I shouldn't say that. I agree with what you're saying about all the issues, racial issues. But when I keep watching the ads, and I saw two interns of your mother and I on the debate last night, Monica Bertrand and Gloria Rojas, on during the course of the I didn't even know because they both disappeared from media. I didn't know that they were working for Bloomberg all that time, you know. And I'm just saying, you know, God, he's pulling out all the stops of all the people he's hired. I wouldn't be surprised he'll have what's the name? she was at your birthday party pretty soon.
Donna.
You know
Donna.
What I'm talking about.
Donna.
Donna, right, Donna Wilson, yeah. I'm having a senior moment, forgive me.
Yeah.
It's the medication.
For me, Mike, I want someone to come in like him. I don't care about his money, but I'm going by the old saying, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, and he is my
friend
right now for this circumstance. The more that if he has the money to beat this guy and to give it to him, I want Mike to give it to him. I don't want him just to beat him. I want him to be on stage and talk about you're nothing. You don't have the money, you say, because I seen you. Remember, we saw you at the party.
Right.
You couldn't get in. That's what I want to see. Bernie doesn't have that. He's the only one that can treat him that way, that can talk to him that way. And that's their value system, yo. That's their value system.
Well,
when you disrespect them on their playing field and you disrespect them on their level and in their realm, that's the best way to beat him, the best way to put his tail between his legs. That's somebody who's better than him in that class that he wishes he could be in. And the worst part about it, Bloomberg didn't start with the billions that Trump started, right? If we believe if the story is really true. So that'll make it even worse for this guy. So that's why I'm feeling Bloomberg right about now.
Bloomberg is more respected on Wall Street than Trump is. Okay?
Exactly.
And that's very significant because if Wall Street continues
Jeffrey,
to tank,
the one that got killed, Eisenberg was more respected than Trump was. The one, the fake bear, the child molester, he was more respected than Trump was.
And consider the economy and the figures that are coming out right now, if it continues to tank, they will turn the Wall Street and the money people will turn their back on Trump because he's the one right now that has put money in their pocket. Okay, let's just face it. He bought his way into the economy, and that's giving them that tax break. Yes, they got it. But did they go out and hire more people? No. Did they take their money to put into research and development and increase the minimum wage? No. So who's getting screwed by all of this is the middle class.
That's the job creator myth.
White folks who, right, exactly. And it's going to bite them in the butt if it continues to tank like it is. I'm just telling you, the signs and the tea leaves are saying that's the only thing that's holding his campaign and House of Cards together is the economy, and if that tanks,
exactly
it's
and
done.
Exactly, and that's always been the when that's always been the thing where they could tell the tax stimulus myth, letting the 1% get more money, they'll put it back and re-stimulate the economy. That's always been the Republican myth that they've told even before Orange Man got there. But now, I said, the access to information by the average person blows that all up because they can't control what was that in Trading Places, the crop report, tried to do. You know, they can't control the crop report no more because everybody got access to the computer that the crop report is on. So what you going to do now?
here's the other question of the hour. This is like Cuba. guys, come on now. How many times do you need to watch Godfathers 1, 2, and 3 to know that Castro and Che Guevara threw out the corporate money of AT&T? Remember that golden phone they were giving to Batista at the meeting? And they took the Jewish mobs and the Italian mob because they wanted to turn Cuba into the Las Vegas of the Caribbean, where they could launder their money just like they're doing in Las Vegas, where they make it legal for prostitution and all kinds of sins of you-know-what, and they were trying to put that into Cuba, and when they put the embargo on Cuba, that's when they were trying to strangle them to death, just the same way they did to Haiti. And thank goodness, because the best, believe it or not, the best medical schools in the world are in Cuba.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that I'm no fan of a dictatorship, but I say
I do
agree with what Saunders says that, you know, they did things to improve the educational system there. Some of the best scientific and medical work is coming out of that country.
Yes. We get it confused because, well, once again, you know, we're talking about the socialism versus democracy. But here's the problem with this democratic socialist concept has got to start firing back at the corruption of a capitalist system that abuses cheap labor. And that's where it's going to cut through the butter, because at the point of which you can't get a minimum wage above $7,000 or $8,000 in some of these red states, you know what? You're starving people to death in a slow
And that's where, you know, that's where you come into conflict with what the principles allegedly that the nation was founded on, right? We're supposed to be founded on being, we believe in capitalism. So that's where the conflict is, right? I just wish, and also too, when you have these various forms of government, you know, on paper, you know, Russia at one time, they were trying to push communism, the people for the people, everybody's for the people, socialism, you know, where the government, what, you know, we have the government helps the citizens when they can. I'm not quoting the various forms. You guys know them a lot better than I am. But the point I'm trying to make is normally when all these forms of government or society, it's the individuals. You know, it's the individuals. A lot of times, you know, when we're talking about democratic socialism, right, or whatever process, it's always the individuals that determine how well that system works, right? So we have a capitalist society, but you can have a democratic capitalism, right, where it's a little bit more democratic, where you're spreading the wealth around, which might fall into socialism and all that. But all of these labels we're putting on these various forms of government, when you really need a mixture of the two, it has to be whatever works, but it's only going to work when you have individuals that are willing to make it work. If you have individuals that are willing to exploit those systems for their own personal benefit, none of them work. None of them work. That's why I said, and an honor system only works when people are when you have honorable motherfuckers in the system.
Right, that's it.
You know,
as I read this headline, Trump campaign. I was just going to say, I'm sorry, but Trump has this. I'm surfing the internet while you all talk it, and I see this headline: Trump campaign plans information centers for black voters in battleground states. Now, I wonder what that's about.
What does he plan to do?
Information centers. In other words, he's going to
misinformation centers.
Thank you.
That's what he's going to have, misinformation centers for black people. So come in and lie and say all kinds of crazy stuff. You know, the hustler black person, like that one pimpish guy at Ohio, will take his money and keep it moving, you know, because they said they got
money. Well, they've been giving out money. That's true.
They're giving out liberal cash, right? They come, you know, and I had a friend on the internet, on Facebook, you know, people start going on those, start discussing it, and he coined the phrase, which I think all the blacks for Trump should use as a, can really use as a campaign slogan, coons for cash.
We
came up with
cash.
Sounds like a jingle. Coons for cash, coons for cash, coons for cash, vote for Trump. And you got to smile real big and give two thumbs up. I think
and
that would be the jingle.
Coons for cash and the coons
for
us.
Coons for cash, vote for Trump. But that's Donald Trump's smile, because that's going to be a winner for them. We need to get this bastard out of office.
I
can't be entertained by him anymore. He's entertaining, but I just don't like. I want him to be the reality show president. I don't want him to be the reality president. As the reality show CEO, but you know, I can't have you be the reality president. You screw me up a little bit too much now.
Sad.
You know.
Sad.
I mean, this is unbelievable, but with this guy. So any final things? We had the NAACP Image Awards, which I didn't watch the other night. I don't know if you guys
watched
it.
It was wonderful.
It was nice.
I'll tell you what I really, really liked about it, Eric and Wayne, was this. It's wonderful for us. You and I are artists. It's wonderful for us to see our art and our art form and our culture honored for creating art that imitates life. I looked at the – you compare the awards that our folks got, and then you look at the awards for the Grammys, and you look at the awards for the Oscars, and you look at the awards for the Tonys, and so many of those awards given are given for life imitating art, not art imitating life, which means the awards are going to forms of entertainment that – are only virtual reality. They're not real.
Fantasy.
They're make believe. It's fantasy. And we are, and our, and that's why it was really, it was a very touching to see Jamie Foxx and Bryan Stevenson winning the best film and best story and best actors and best supporting actors for a story that was based in truth.
Yeah.
About the, you know what I'm saying, and for you, Wayne, who reports facts, truth. You're a journalist. Mm. You don't want to report on virtual reality crap because it's make believe, and we're in this make believe concept right now.
It's unfortunate that the other side has made a killing doing that act, you know. And the deal is that I'm not saying that it doesn't have its place, but there's so many stories that are coming out now, and we could go back to Malcolm X and what Spike did to big up his, you know, his history.
Yes.
Ray Charles, you just mentioned Jamie Foxx. I mean, I thought that was an astounding performance. Still, years later, I still feel that was one of the best performances I had ever seen. You know, Harriet Tubman, which I didn't get a chance to see yet. You know, there's so many stories coming out of our community that we don't need to go into Fantasy Island, you know?
No,
exactly. I was going to say, they've run out of their storylines to tell. They've told them all already at infinitum, where we're all throwing up, even they're throwing up from telling their same stories over and over again.
That's right.
I never watched Downton Abbey because I've seen that story before. Never watched Game of Thrones because I was like, oh, gee, another medieval white people in castles.
Yeah.
Don't care.
Yeah.
Don't give a shit. But you know what the fresh stories are? You know what the fresh, interesting stories are coming from? Just the ones you said, Wayne, about Malcolm X, about a slave trying to overcome, getting killed, about a brother that was sent to prison. Those are the stories that ain't been told, well, like you said, by in the real-life drama. Because it's so real for us that here's a story you want to hear about. Let me tell you this story. Right. You know, not the one you already heard. Not the one – I mean, this is part of the – the thing about the industry to me that got to me so much to the point where I didn't, there were certain shows, if it's not well done, I'm not going to watch another show about a white dude trying to be the hero or doing whatever. Let me watch the show over here about the white woman. Let me see life from her perspective. Because
even that is
something, even though I've seen that way too much or a lot more than everybody else's story, but even that is something different. It's a new perspective.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know,
exactly.
You know, they've run out of their stories to tell because they've told them all about them all the time. We've seen them. Oh, okay, we know who you are. That's why Parasite wins an Oscar because we've seen
all
people.
And you think about
go ahead.
Yeah, and I was just gonna say because think about this, guys. You know, we always try to inject history as part of our conversation here to connect the dots from yesterday.
Yes, sir.
To today, to tomorrow. Do you know what today is? And you still haven't seen this story in any movie or any made-for-TV, Netflix, Hulu. It hadn't been done. But do you know what historically happened on this day in 2012? This was the day that Trayvon Martin was killed by George Zimmerman.
No kidding. Wow.
Think about that.
Wow.
Think about that.
It's almost 10 years. That's amazing. And I'd raised that just the other day on the air. It's amazing.
And I mean, so it's the importance of the history and our art imitating the reality of our life and culture and legacy. And here's this young man who is 17 years old on his way to becoming the man he wanted to be, the pilot he wanted to be, killed because he was having a hoodie and a bunch of
Skittles. Yeah.
Killed by a 28-year-old.
You can't make that up, man. You can't make that up.
Well, you can't make that up. And this is the part that is exasperating, because when we are telling our story about Harriet Tubman, brilliantly acted, beautifully shot, a story that nobody knows, you know, and it's a story that should have been taught years ago. But here we can't even celebrate and tell the story of the Central Park Five and get them exonerated the way they should be. We can't even tell Trayvon Martin's, which engaged hashtag Black Lives Matter.
Well,
and here we are,
eight years later. I think eventually those stories will come out, and when we tell a story, it is so compelling, you know, so compelling. But the thing that really got to me about the nomination with Parasite, I'm not saying I didn't see it, I'm not saying they weren't worthy, but this orange idiot immediately goes to a campaign site, and he makes a reference. We didn't get a chance to talk about this last week, but he made a reference about how Parasite won. And what is this country coming to? That word's out of his mouth. What, you know, why isn't it on the same order of Gone with the Wind? This 1950s baby had the audacity to come out with Gone with the Wind, because
Gone
his world stopped with Gone with the Wind. You know?
Exactly.
I mean, I couldn't believe it.
Exactly.
And, you know, and like, you have no respect for Asian Americans. You know.
Believe it, brother. Believe it. We in the matrix, brother. Believe it. Put around and put that thing up
in
your head. We in the matrix,
man. I just said to myself, no one gets a pass with this boy, you know? I mean, and he'll do that.
You know, when you're
he'll
a racist
that
guy, you know
that's group.
Yeah.
So,
well,
here we are. Saturday is South Carolina. Next Monday or next Tuesday is the Super Tuesday. Now, you know what's going to happen. The dynamics of who's going to be in front is going to start to play more to our communities of color.
Because they're going
to have to make this story real, folks, because they know in 5-6 months, if they can't get our attention now, it's over.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing that and we got about another 7 minutes. Here's the thing,
right?
That what really irks me about the politics thing, and I go back to some of the candidates who are really should drop out. You know, you're at 4%, 7%, 11%. You need to drop out.
Yeah.
Klobuchar, you need to drop out. Tom Steyer can only stay in because he's got the money, and if he doesn't, and maybe he picks up steam, cool. But if you ain't raising the money and there's not, you know, it's like, why are you still in a race? Because your ego is in it, right? Because you want to be
exactly.
And this is what I felt that I saw about Kamala a little bit. Your ambition is showing. You wanted so much for yourself, you're losing sight that you're trying to do it for yourself and everybody else included. You know, she wants to. I can do it so much. I know I can. You know, I kind of hear remnants, and I'm not saying she's actually said that, but her vibe is that way. Makes me hear remnants of Trump at the Republican convention talking about only I can do it. Only I can, you know, make this happen. So, you know, that's the thing that irks me about politics, because you get individuals and personalities involved who liked the celebrity, like the fame, like the power of it, as it serves them personally.
That's true.
Yep.
That is true.
Yes. Yes, sir.
But we're at the crossroads now. We're you know, we got to circle the wagons. We're going to have to do something because, you know, time is running short, and I know that if we don't get behind one person to take us into November, I just don't know what it's going to take. And again, I'm not happy with the seven who stand in that party, and I will not vote anywhere else, independent, Republican, forget about it. My thing is that we need to just get to where the one person we think that could pull it off, and I'm not feeling Bernie Sanders, you know, because of what happened the last time and some of his views today, you know. He may have the support of the millennials again, and again, he's like one of these Brooklyn boys that I see who just, you know, can't quietly turn around and gracefully bow out to support who should have been the nominee, you know, and was the nominee, but he couldn't bow out. He, you know,
I think that's more of just him as opposed to him being a Brooklyn boy that you're trying to allude to. I would personally be down with him if I thought he could really realistically win. But you, Bernie, you got to stop saying socialist. If we're going to really win, you need to listen to some other people that are on your side, Bernie. You need to listen to some other cats and just do this for us, because we can win with you. We can gather the troops, but what's going to be required? You need to do a couple of things. We need to register a lot more voters. We need to have the rest of the 120, 130 million people that actually didn't vote in the last presidential election get at least 10% of that to vote. Get them at least 10% of those individuals excited enough to come out and vote, because that was our problem the last time. You know, we actually did beat the guy, you know, in the popular vote.
But we
lost in Electoral College. So let's get more people registered to vote. Get more of the 310 million Americans that are living in the country. Get more of them to come out as opposed to just 120 million. We got a negligence with another, 180 million people that haven't voted. My God, it's crazy.
Yeah. We need a landslide, man. If it ain't a landslide, we're toast. That's the deal.
Yeah, and we don't. Yeah. I mean, we just don't need any individuals who think it's all about them at this point. Because, you know, and we need individuals going to be able to stand on stage with this guy in November in a debate and be able to respond in a like manner to his rapid fire lies that he will be firing at them in the course of the debate. And I'm sorry to say, but I think that the best person for that, for me personally, that I see right now is Michael Bloomberg. And also Bernie Sanders. I'm talking about in a position to win, because I think that Elizabeth Warren could stand up there with Trump, eat him up. I think that Bernie could stand up there with Trump and eat him up. I think that Mike can. But the problem with Elizabeth and Bernie is that they have that baggage that drags. Certainly Elizabeth, the Pocahontas thing, is not going to get her there. And Bernie, if you keep talking the socialist thing, when it comes to the general, that's where the problem is going to be. That's where the problem is. So let's be pragmatic. Just don't say the word. Just let them assume it. You said it once. You don't need to keep reminding everybody. So please, you know, that's all I'm saying. But
unbelievable.
I know.
Get out of here.
It's like a catch-22 that we're in, right?
I know. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? It's the bad movie we're in.
It is like a movie.
As we're going out there, I saw, just as we leave it, I wanted to share with you guys real quick. I saw this great documentary on Maya Angelou the other night on the All Arts Network.
Yes.
It was really fantastic. I recorded it because I want to watch it. I just love that lady so much. And she reminds me of an era of black creativity and intellect of that was really I looked up to.
Yeah. I saw the Miles Davis documentary. It's really good.
Oh, gotta watch
that. Really good. Yeah, you gotta watch
that.
Just to tell some stuff that you didn't know, but it's really well done. And I mean, Miles was a genius. He really was.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. He was. He was.
He was a mean son of a bitch at times, but his music was just incredible.
Don Cheadle and my man.
That's good.
I forget
too.
The guy's name.
It's excellent.
And which is really good. My buddy Jerome Preston Bates, actor friend of mine, used to work at the hotel that Miles lived in. But we got to go, guys. We've got a minute 12. Byron, you want to give the people your salute and tell them what to
say. That's right. Peace and love always. And remember, my people, we are the majority. So stop acting like a minority. Use your vote. You can and will make the difference. And if you're not part of the solution, you are the problem.
You're part of the problem. All right, man. All right, Brian. Talk to you later. Brother Wade Gilman.
Hey, man.
Tell the people what you think.
I'm going to go in a different direction this week. I'm still grieving for Kobe, but I was really taken back by Michael Jordan's tribute. Really taken back. Brought to tears.
Okay, well, we're going to talk about Kobe's tribute. I'm sorry we didn't get to that, but, we've got to talk about that next week because I want to say some things about it. All right, but I'll talk to you again, Brother Wayne Gilman, legendary newsman. Talk to you again next week.
All the best.
Bye-bye. All right, thanks, everybody, for listening to the K. Thompson Live Show. My name is Citizen Payne. I am the Sun.
We're Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. usually, and we're archived, folks. So if you miss us one time, you could hear us again later. Mom is on assignment up in heaven. Talk to you guys next week.